So hi all, good to be back at 4pm. As was said before, my name is Tom. If you don't know me, or if you've simply forgotten me since I moved to the 6pm service, I do ministry with uni students. I work with the Uni Fellowship of Christians along with Mike E and Laura, who's gone, and alongside Luke, who works with our international students as well. A little bit about me: I like metal music, I like Russian literature, I like cooking, and that about sums me up. It's all I do with my time. It's an odd thing to say, but I think it's a good time to be a single person. Singleness is spoken of, acknowledged, and celebrated in the church in a way that it hasn't been for really ever. Globally recognized speakers and theologians have been delivering talks. Prominent publishers have been releasing books and articles, and I think with, as Miranda was saying before, with all of this topic, conversation about homosexuality, same-sex attraction, churches have been forced to think long and hard about what type of lifestyle they uphold as good and appropriate. I'm personally thankful as a single guy myself for authors like Wes Hill or Ed Shaw, pastors such as Sam Albury or even Carl Dunick, who's back in Launceston at the Branch. Have you guys heard of Launceston? Yeah. These are guys who've thought long and hard about singleness. They've sought to deliver the Bible's counsel on the subject and are modelling the implications of that biblical wisdom in their own lives. I mention these people because I'm leaning heavily on their work and their thinking and their insights. And if there's one thing that half a semester of one psychology unit has taught me, it's that referencing is important. Honour where honour is due. So before we get into the theology and any insights I might have to offer regarding singleness, I think it's important that we establish that many people can be living the single life because of a wide variety of reasons. Some choose the single life because they have certain ambitions or they land a certain job, which means that being in a relationship doesn't suit that lifestyle. Others go through life and just never have a relationship or never a relationship that sticks. Some are divorced, some are widowed, couples rarely die at the same time. Some have particular psychological or physiological difficulties which make romantic relationships unlikely. Others are not attracted to the opposite sex, and to pursue a heterosexual marriage seems too difficult or unloving, unsatisfying, maybe dishonest. Staying single is preferable. And still others choose to be single for the sake of mission work, ministry, gospel urgency. And for some, it's a combination of these reasons. I'm a combo of those last two. I mentioned all of these reasons, and I'm sure there are more, because I think the way that we talk about singleness has to be really a case-by-case thing. People who are single are going to feel differently about their individual situation and how they got there. So with that disclaimer in mind, let me first give you at least my definition of singleness. A single Christian is someone who is not romantically involved with someone else, which is so far so unsurprising. The difference between the Christian definition and the wider cultural definition of singleness is that the Christian single is also not sexually active. They are celibate, to use the old-fashioned word. By the way, I think it's quite telling that we only have old-fashioned words to describe people who are living a life without sex. Which brings me to my first major point, which is singleness is hard. We'll come back to celibacy shortly, because I don't think it's primarily the command to not have sex, if you're not married, that makes singleness hard, but something wider, something more societal, more cultural. Singleness is not set up to be a feasible path for life, and it's certainly not one to be desired. You don't have to look too far into pop culture to see that we are massively obsessed with romantic love. Music and movies set it up to be this transcendent, blissful thing. I don't think it's a stretch to say that this is one of the major things that shapes a young person's mind, framework for thinking about relationships and forming expectations of them. And look, any time a movie does make singleness the subject line, they're pretty dismal. So I'm thinking particularly of 40-year-old Virgin, because sadly, you know, culture's eyes, who could be weirder and less fulfilled than someone who's still who's 40 and still never had sex? Has anyone seen How to Be Single? It's a Rebel Wilson movie. Look, I'm glad that none of you have put your hand up because it's a terrible movie. It's probably one of the worst I've ever seen. Deeply uninstructive on how to be single, I would say. It's kind of, it's really a C-grade movie about women trying to meet men. If there's one thing that I can say about it is that it shows how discontent can lead to bad decisions and how warped and anemic our culture's view on singleness really is. Well, let's think about this on more of a domestic level. Parents don't usually talk about if their children are going to be married. They talk about when their children are going to be married. And my guess is that most kids, when they're given the talk or whatever, don't hear that they may be single and virgin for their whole lives. So why is singleness hard? Firstly, we're not really taught to think about singleness as a valid option, nor are we taught what to expect of it. Secondly, singleness is hard because we are human, and humans have biological impulses that ask for attention, and we also have brains that crave intimacy. We thrive when we have real intimacy with other people. This is a good and God-given desire that we have. The trick with intimacy is that we often make it synonymous with sex, as if it were the most important place to be vulnerable and accepted. But sex isn't intimacy itself. It has a certain type of intimacy, it can be an expression of intimacy, or it can deepen intimacy, but it's not the thing itself. To know and to be known, to love and be loved, is a central need, and sex is not the main pathway to that. Intimacy is hard for any human in this fallen world, even if you are married, but if you're not having sex and you're not married, because those are particularly clear and observable and tangible things, it can be especially hard to figure out what intimacy means for you and how to find it. Which brings me back to celibacy, that old-fashioned term. Even if you don't believe that sex and intimacy are the same thing, it's still hard to go without. Partly because we have bodies and other humans are attractive, but also because it's made out to be this brain-explodingly awesome thing and absolutely necessary for a healthy, happy life. And if you're not having it, it's a little bit sad. Another terrible movie out there is 40 Days and 40 Nights. I think it's a movie, it might be something else. But it's about a guy who goes without sex for 40 days and 40 nights. And I mean, over a month without sex, can you imagine? Madness. In light of this attitude, it's no surprise that single Christians may feel like their sexuality is going to waste. Finally, it's hard because we're made in the image of God, a God of intimacy and a God of community. That's why he's gathered us together as a church. When he made us, he declared that it's not good to be alone, and to provide for that need, God created a partner for a marriage relationship. The reason why we have gender is for the sake of marriage, and to go without that is to feel the absence of something that we are designed for. So it's hard to be single, but what does the Bible say on the matter? The Bible doesn't talk at length about singleness. What it does say is everything, really everything that you could say to generally describe singleness, that it has its own advantages and disadvantages. It gives it a definition. But there's no specific command for single people. The Bible gives us, however, a framework from which to think about singleness with a great deal of honesty and I think a great deal of dignity as well. It gives us wisdom and God's promises upon which to build our understanding of singleness. The first thing to note about the Bible's perspective is that it talks about singleness for what it is and not what it isn't. As much as it starts with, it is not good for man to be alone, it doesn't go on to say that single people are lacking and incomplete because of their circumstances. It doesn't define single people as incomplete or lacking. It couldn't, because Jesus, the center of God's story, was the truest and most complete human being who ever lived, and he never married. Paul, in that passage that was read out for us a moment ago, is actively encouraging certain people to stay single. So the Bible clearly thinks of singleness at least not a bad situation to be in, and also a feasible option. It's viable, firstly, because, as I just said, even though unmarried, you still bear the image of God, and you are as complete a human being as any other. We'll come back to that idea, but let's also remember that this passage, the main Bible passage about singleness, 1 Corinthians 7, is written in a letter to a church, a community of believers. Christians aren't saved into isolation. They're saved into the body of Christ. And it's this body that Paul talks about later on in 1 Corinthians. In chapter 12, feel free to flick over if you have a Bible with you, 1 Corinthians 12, 14 to 23, 12, 14 to 23, Paul says, kind of humorously, the body is not made up of one part, but of many, 12 to 43. If the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason cease to be part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason cease to be a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But in fact, God has arranged the parts of the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. If they were all one part, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, but one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you, and the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable, and the parts that we think are less honourable we treat with special honour. This passage isn't directly talking about singleness, but I think the same principles apply. Single people shouldn't be led to think that they are less welcome in the body, nor should someone who is married look upon the single person and think of them as less than necessary. God has chosen to save that person, and thus they are an integral part of what makes the church the church. Because there is a perception that it's less fortunate to be single is exactly why we need to remember that they are, in fact, indispensable. Working from verse 23 of chapter 12, we should consider how we can give special honour to those that are thought of as less honourable. In some ways, it's pretty straightforward to ascribe honour to marriage. Couples honour the covenant that they are in. Their commitment is celebrated at their wedding and then at significant landmarks from then on. How and when do we honour the single person? Hopefully it's not just at their funeral. Singleness is feasible because it's not actually to be left alone, but rather practiced in community. Jesus says with great sincerity in Mark 10, 29 to 31, let me just read this one to you. I tell you the truth, no one who has left home or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for me and the gospel will fail to receive 100 times as much this age. Homes, brothers, sisters, mothers, children and fields, and with them persecutions. Just slipped that one in there. And in the age to come, eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and the last first. Though someone may not gain a biological family of their own in this life, what they gain in a spiritual family is certainly not to be discounted. It's of immense worth within Jesus' eyes. Worth sacrificing for, in fact. The Bible sets up singleness to be a plausible thing, but it goes a step further and talks about it as a good thing, a really good thing, with a great deal of purpose and meaning. So much so that back in 1 Corinthians 7, it talks about it as a gift alongside marriage. Let me dispel a misconception about this whole singleness is a gift thing. It's not like there is some spirit-given superpower that allows a person to thrive unmarried. You can understand where people get that idea of because, of course, there are people who can cope better than others with being single just as much as there are differences in how much people flourish in marriage. But there's a huge problem with this idea that you have to have a gift to do well as a single person. To say you need a certain special power to be single is ultimately to come to a conflicting conclusion. It says to the single person that you are required to be obedient to the Bible when it comes to your relationships while simultaneously saying that you're unable to. It doesn't take a superpower to be single, and to think so is to highlight an underlying assumption that singleness is not good. So Paul is actually talking about the circumstance of being single here. That's the gift. It talks about certain advantages. And I'm sure there are plenty of people, I know a lot of them, who wish that this gift came with a receipt. And that's absolutely okay. That's an understandable sentiment. The Bible does not say you have to be happily single and super strong within it, just as much as it says you don't have to be happily married. But what Paul has to say about the goodness of this gift remains true, even for those that find being alone super duper hard. Like I said earlier, there's no specific command for single people, but the Bible gives us a framework from which to think about singleness with honesty and dignity. Firstly, and perhaps surprisingly, he states in verse 28 of chapter 7 that those who marry will face many troubles and that single people can be spared of those troubles. I've said plenty of times already that singleness is hard, but that, of course, is not to say that marriage is easy. Marriage is also hard. It's fraught with danger. I mean, it's putting two sinful people in a lifelong bond, and that's bound to have its complexities. And if there's kids in the mix as well, that's another layer of complexity. There's plenty you could say when comparing the difficulties of singleness and those of marriage, and we don't want to do that in a harsh way, but we would do well to be wise in recognizing those hardships so that we can think about our own situation and the situations of others with soberness and with generosity. One interesting piece of wisdom that I heard was from a guy that I've mentioned already, Sam Alberry. He's a UK pastor, global speaker. He's single, same-sex attracted, fantastic speaker. He did a talk earlier in the year on 5 misconceptions about singleness, which I think is the best talk I've ever heard until now. No, this is, again, it's all borrowed from him. You can find it on the Gospel Coalition podcast. He said he'd rather be unhappily single than unhappily married. The thing about being unhappily single is that the consequences probably don't stretch too far beyond you in comparison to the way that they might in an unhappy marriage. I could be miserable in my unmarried state, but my relationships wouldn't necessarily be negatively impacted because of it, other than friends and family bearing my burden with me, which is really more of a positive thing anyway. Whereas an unhappy marriage, the unhappiness is messier because it is shared with another human being to whom you're responsible. If you're a parent, then the proximity of your kids makes that unhappiness even more chaotic and pronounced because of the invariable distraction and emotional energy that children demand. You're left with little time and strength and will to confront the issues in your marriage. Unhappy singleness is likely simpler than unhappy marriage. Paul also says in verses 32 to 34 that single people are more free to be concerned about how they can please the Lord and be devoted to him in body and spirit. People have often taken these verses and said that single people have more time and energy and should use it for the kingdom. And I'm sure people who say that are trying to value and encourage single people, but I would say that's clumsy and often untrue. Energy and the ability to manage time is so specific from person to person, and you can't blanket apply that to single people. We're all only human. There's only so many hours in a day that we can spend working, regardless of our home life. I, for example, am not known as someone who is brimming with energy. In fact, I'm often quite lethargic and sleepy. And actually, I suspect I'd be better at time management if I were married with kids. I find it, for example, disproportionately difficult task to get out of bed in the morning. And I think that what sometimes causes that is that in the back of my mind, I'm conscious that no one is depending on me to get up and feed them or head off to work and provide a living. Point being, the advantage of being single is not necessarily that you have more time and energy. It's more accurate to say that those who aren't married have greater flexibility and a greater opportunity to focus on gospel work. Without the constraints of marriage, a person is able to leave the house within a moment's notice, to go help out a friend at night, even stay with them a few days. Without kids in the car, the single person can spend long trips praying for mission. in the stretches of quiet within an unmarried person's life, they can occupy themselves with expanding their knowledge on whatever they think is going to be useful. Without a family, you don't have to be immediately concerned for the comfort or well-being of others as you make plans for where you go and what you'll do. Single people likely have more room to bend and more space in which to focus on God and his mission. Finally, single people have something good and beautiful to demonstrate to the church and to the wider world. The Bible talks about marriage as a parable, a picture, or a trailer for the relationship between Christ and the church. God's people are consistently described as the bride of Christ throughout the whole Bible. In Ephesians 5, marriage is used to describe Jesus' intimate connection to the church. And in Revelation 19, we see that wedding taking place. Marriage is a good and rich thing that demonstrates the shape of the gospel. But singleness, too, has a unique way of testifying to the goodness of the gospel. It declares to a world obsessed with sex and romantic intimacy that those things aren't ultimate. In heaven, there will be no human marriage because the truer and higher reality will have come to fruition. To again quote old mate Sam Albury, by forgoing marriage now, singleness is a way of both anticipating this reality and testifying to its goodness. It's like skipping the entree to be hungrier for the main course. It's a way of saying this future reality is so certain that we can live according to it now. If marriage shows us the shape of the gospel, singleness shows us its efficiency. I want to close with a couple of practical comments. Firstly, parents, I reckon you should talk about and honour singleness with your kids. Because for whatever reason, they might find that to faithfully and effectively live out their Christian adulthood, singleness is the best path for them. They may want to be a missionary. They may acquire a job that would make marriage unlikely. Maybe they won't develop to be attracted to their counterpart sex. They may be widowed young, or they may just never land in a suitable relationship. Secondly, if you are single, don't kick yourself when it gets difficult. Author of Practical Theology for Women, Wendy Alsop, great writer, says, "I think there's something profound to be learned from God at creation. I think there's something profound to be learned from God at creation, noting that it is not good to be alone. That's monumental. In perfection, it's not good to be alone. Single friend, I encourage you to stop kicking yourself when the painful feelings of loss arise in your hearts. Don't fall into the, why am I not past this mentality? You aren't past it because it's a really deep need. It's normal to feel grief. You feel grief and restlessness because you bear the image of God, because you are like him." And holding that intention, she later reflects on 1 Corinthians 10:13, which says, "No temptation has seized you except what is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not let you tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it." Alsop encourages single people, saying, "You need your Christian family. Don't allow Satan to use feelings of alienation to marginalize you from the church." Thirdly, and this is my tidbit, don't just pass time, use it. The people that I know who thrive as single people are those that have a certain level of ambition and a desire to learn. They're the type of people who have a sense of purpose and value outside of marriage and child rearing. I find it very easy to just whittle away the hours by endlessly re-watching TV shows and re-listening to podcasts rather than utilising them for my growth and the service of others. I find doing things that you can get better at are things that will make those hours more satisfying and ultimately more fruitful. Lastly, I want to go back to Mark chapter 10. "I tell you the truth, no one has left home or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for me." All these important relational, communal things. "For me and for the gospel will fail to receive 100 times as much this age. Homes, brothers, sisters, mothers, children and fields, and with them persecutions. And in the age to come, eternal life. Many who are first will be last and last first." we're all, single or married, to consider what we count as gain in this life and what we're willing to give up for the gospel. We're each to think about how the gospel affects our circumstances and how those circumstances can be utilized for the furthering of the gospel. To live in a community where sacrifice is demonstrated will be a clear message to the world about the sufficiency of what gives us, and will provide a more secure environment for those that, through their own choice or not, have to go without. Please pray with me. Heavenly Father, thank you for the way in which you constructed your church. You put each person where you have planned for them to be. Help us all to accept your sovereignty and live well under it. Thank you for the gift of marriage and for the way that it displays the gospel. Please help married people at Crossroads to live out that gifting well. Thank you for the gift of singleness and for the opportunity that we have to testify to the sufficiency of what you've done for us. Help us all to live in anticipation for the day when human marriage will pass away and our relationships to you are fully realized.